Good morning and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday. I'm your moderator, Corey Lane, producer Dennis Johnson. We go until 1:15 this afternoon. Our topic today, something that is one of the most important things but least discussed here on Voice of Barbados. We bring to you a look at the Barbadian amidst climate change. Now, when you hear climate change, you usually think of the bigger countries or helplessness in the whole discussion. But by the end of the program this morning and into the afternoon, I want us to walk away with a sense of what really is happening in relation to climate change and what are the things that we can do differently. What we cannot do, we already know. What we can do, I want to have some time sitting and discussing that. To help me discuss this issue this morning, I am pleased to bring to you, I call him Professor, but he probably would prefer Mr. David Bino, and he's the National Coordinator with the United Nations Development Program, Global Environment Facility Small Grants Program. Good morning and welcome, David.
Good morning, Corey. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. And good morning, Barbados, as well.
Great. Now, before we get into the program, I just want to give listeners a sense of where we are going today. I want to start the program off hearing a bit about yourself so people have context of who they're listening to. I want to talk about the program, the Global Environment Facility Program, and I want you, because you've been exposed to it at the local, regional, and international level, what is happening with climate change across Barbados, across the region, and across the world. Today, I know that a lot of people, these are types of programs, a lot of people sit down and they listen and they try to find out, how is this relevant to me? This is something the government have to deal with. This is something the environmentalists have to deal with, the tree huggers, etc. But just to bring relevance to the listeners, doing my own research for this program, the whole idea of climate change and more specifically global warming has been going on for some time. Yeah. It is said to be responsible for the lowering of the yields in the sugarcane industry, something that we depended on for foreign exchange. So we had the attack on the markets itself, but then the drought-like conditions have been said to be responsible for lowering of yields. Now that is something that affects Barbados at a macro level. And if you look at the drought-like conditions and what they've been doing to the aquifers in terms of replenishing the aquifers, that has caused many a water wars and many a water calls on this very program. And I think that that will connect closer to the average man in the street as they understand the importance of water. So, before we go any further, I have to let you know this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material. For building supplies, big or small, at Williams
Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
The Barbadian amidst climate change. Good morning and welcome again, David. I want you to first start by telling us a bit about your training. What makes you qualified to speak on this subject?
Yeah, in terms of my background, my first degree is in agriculture science. My master's is in environmental economics and management. And my PhD, which I'm currently completing, is in innovation and governance for sustainable development. And this focuses on basically the impact of multi-level governance on small states as it relates to climate change adaptation. In terms of my work, I've been working in this area for a while, the Green Economy Scoping Study, which speaks heavily to climate change and adaptation to climate change and mitigation in Barbados, was part of that team providing environmental economic advice. In relation to our draft climate change policy, I have contributed to that, and I also sit on the National Climate Change Committee, which looks after the mitigation adaptation plans and implementation for Barbados. In relation to the UN, I would have done the first report, one of the joint scientists on that, do the first report on small and developing states. A major component of that would have been looking at climate change. With reference to our implementation of our policies, the Just Small Grants Program of which I'm the national coordinator, has been seen as a critical arm of implementing climate change adaptation and mitigation measures at the community level. And this fed out of the Green Economy Scoping Study. The Ministry of Environment some 5 years ago would have given about $1 million to the program to look at climate change in particular and some other key issues in relation to the sustainable development of Barbados. I can go on some more, but I think that would have given you a synopsis of...
No, I know you can, and that's why I think Barbados would agree with me that we've got the perfect man for the job this morning to look at dissecting this whole this myth as seen by others and this mystery by many others of what is climate change and what can be done. Before we go any further, I want to look at the majority of our listening audience understand adaptation and mitigation, but for the one or two that may not, I want you to explain to them when you say when we talk about adaptation and mitigation, what is meant by those terms?
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go to adaptation and mitigation, is important that the audience, that they have a good appreciation for what is climate change.
Mm-hmm, true that.
Now, you know, the climate has always been changing. You have the Ice Age, you have different ages. So the climate changes, and it's really the long-term change of the average weather conditions. And you would look at things like temperature, precipitation, and wind. So we're saying that the average change of weather is actually not getting cooler, but it's getting warmer. That's where you hear the notion called global warming, because the type of climate change that we're experiencing is a climate change where the world is getting warmer. Now, when you speak specifically to adaptation and mitigation, you normally hear the word mitigation more. So primarily mitigation is when you're trying to reduce the harmful impacts of mainly man-made activities that it would have on global warming. So you're trying to reduce the amount of carbon emissions that you're putting in the atmosphere that would then in turn cause the world to get warmer and warmer. And to understand that, you have to look at a simple example of a greenhouse. You know, many people in Barbados know they want greenhouses to protect their crops. Mm-hmm. But the greenhouse is really a very temperate idea, colder countries, and it's really designed to allow the sunlight to come in and then trap the sunlight in that greenhouse so the greenhouse gets warmer, so you can grow crops even when it's winter. But we adapted the greenhouse in Barbados and we use it and we modified it. But in that context of the sun rays coming in and then being trapped, we have a layer around the world that allows sunlight to come in. And it also traps a certain amount of sunlight that we can have the ideal temperature for life on Earth. But what happens is that carbon dioxide and methane and other greenhouse gases acts like that layer that creates a blanket around the Earth. And as we emit more and more carbon dioxide and methane and other greenhouse gases, what is happening, that blanket is getting thicker and it's not allowing a lot of the sun rays to then exit the Earth. So the heat is being trapped within that layer and trapped within the Earth, so the Earth is getting hotter and hotter. And strangely enough, it's a compounding situation. It means that as the Earth gets hotter, that more greenhouse gases would be released that are naturally trapped in things like permafrost, and then it gets hotter and hotter. So we need to act, and we need to act now. And that's climate change mitigation, reducing the amount of greenhouse gases that we emit that actually contributes to this problem. On the other side, there's climate change adaptation. And before I flip the coin, I must add that in relation to the Earth getting warmer and these greenhouse gases, the majority of these gases were really produced and emitted in developed countries. So they really hold the main responsibility for global warming as it is happening today. However, small islands like Barbados, we actually have the majority of the impacts, and we bear the majority of the impacts. So when we speak about climate change, small islands like Barbados should speak very heavily towards climate change adaptation, because climate change is happening, it will happen, and even if we take action now, the climate will still change. So we need to adapt. So climate change adaptation speaks to how can you change your normal? What is your normal now? How you build houses, you know, how you produce food, how you get water, so that when the climate does change, that you're not worse off than you were before. So very simply put.
Well, the one of the things that I think more Barbadians will be tuned into internationally, things like the discussion around the Paris Agreement.
Yes.
And those who follow COP and so on. But I think for let me ask you, what is your thoughts in terms of how the average Barbadian relates to things like climate change? Do you think they're involved enough, plugged in enough, tuned in enough to topics like these?
I find interesting enough that many of the average Barbadians do have some notion of climate change, mm-hmm. but they may not call it climate change. Mm-hmm. Everyone may say, well, you know, the place is getting hotter. You know, we're experiencing more and more droughts.
The night's colder and the day is hotter.
Yeah. When I went to the beach, the level used to be here, but now it's encroaching mm-hmm. on the land. Mm-hmm. All these things are their expressions of climate change. They may not call it climate change. Mm-hmm. And then as you move just a little beyond the average, many persons are very keen and knowledgeable about climate change, and they want to take action. But you know, it's our responsibility, those who know and who understand, to share this knowledge. And that's why what you're doing here this morning must be lauded, because these are avenues for us to build awareness. And when you're more aware, you act.
But I'm going to tell you right now, I am actually sitting here in serious shock, mm-hmm. Probably to the point of passing. Now, usually when I have these types of shows, the phone usually rings after, maybe say 20 after 11. They give the guests an opportunity to start to speak and so on. If you have topics like we're talking about lawyers and people not being able to access the lawyers and those types of topics, solid waste, tax, the phone goes from 11 a.m. We already have 3 calls lined up, and that is not enough for us. So I'm thinking that Barbadians may be tuned in more than we are giving them credit.
That's it.
So I am very, very, I'm pleasantly surprised. Now, before we go off any further, one of the things I really want to look at is to get an understanding of the work of the Global Environment Facility, specifically, let's say, over the last year or two.
Yeah. Our work has been consistent, and it has been very rewarding in terms of some of the results that we're seeing. So our work is within 5 main focal areas. We look at climate change, of course, mm-hmm. both climate change adaptation and mitigation, mm-hmm. also biodiversity conservation, mm-hmm. international waters, the prevention of harmful waste and chemicals. Mm-hmm. And we also have a strong role to play in terms of biodiversity conservation, our cross-cutting issues such as poverty reduction, youth empowerment, working with people with youth, working with youth and persons with disabilities. Now, we have about 97 projects scattered across Barbados, and we have invested and catalyzed well over $8 million in the last 5 to 6 years. And over the last year, many of our grantees have been very pleased to see the work that they've done. In the context of climate change, we have the Substance Abuse Foundation. If you go there and you visit their Vernon House, you will see the roofs are all decked off with solar. And it's amazing because they're taking action against climate change through mitigation, but it's showing you that this problem of climate change can also be an opportunity. Because with these roofs being decked off with solar and PV, photovoltaic panels, they have the ability now to generate about $100,000 a year from the energy that they then sell back to the grid.
I need you to repeat that in case a listener or two didn't catch that correct or thought you made a mistake or a slip of the tongue.
Yes, from having their roofs outfitted with photovoltaic panels, they now have the opportunity to generate $100,000 per year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are the type of impactful projects that we like to be associated with. We also had the opportunity to partner with Solar Grow to develop a greenhouse that's fully automated, controlled by your smartphone or iPad. And basically, you can control temperature and other factors within the greenhouse. We know that with climate change, water is gonna be an issue significantly. So 40% of the water used in that greenhouse is recycled. Yeah, it's amazing. These are local persons who would have programmed this software, local persons who would have designed and also built the greenhouses. So we do have the capacity here to adapt. Mm-hmm. We also have some very impactful projects as it relates to looking at the issue of sargassum seaweed. And you know, sargassum seaweed is a big thing. People see it as a big problem, big waste. Mm-hmm. But even in my previous years with the government of Barbados as agronomist, I said that see it as wealth because it's a source of fertilizer. It's a source of energy. So our research and partnership with the Barbados Renewable Energy Association, we did some studies on sargassum. And we would have demonstrated that it could be used for many purposes as relates to energy generation. And you know, Barbados has a big energy import cost. And with sargassum here, we should utilize it. We also did models in terms of what size factory you would need within Barbados to sustain this. How often do you need to harvest? But building from that, we now have a project within our special area that looks at blue economy. And the government is moving heavily towards blue economy when it announced the Ministry of Maritime Affairs and Blue Economy. show that the government had significant vision. And so we did a special call, and we now have several schools around Barbados who are producing cosmetics, facial care products, all made from sargassum inputs. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's so many projects that we have that we can, the solar bus, if you go to Bridgetown, you go by the port, you can take a ride around Bridgetown. We partner with the Small Business Association, and you can go on that solar bus and get the history of Barbados while you go and use sustainable transport. So we don't even only talk about these things. I'm very proud to be associated with a program that acts.
Well, implementation, that's something we cry about here all the time. Implementation deficit disorder, they call it. And and that's why I'm happy to do programs like these, because until yesterday, I get these voice notes and people saying, we should do this and we should be doing that. And I have to whisper, it is being done.
It's happening. And Corey, I didn't mention, there's a gentleman that has a ranch called the Nature Fund Ranch. We're doing some amazing work with you.
You heard something about
that. Yeah, and they have solar on their roof in partnership with the Small Grants Program as well. Right. And I think that we're seeing some very innovative work in Barbados, but it's not only about solving one problem. Mm-hmm. It's looking at the problem and the many problems and finding solutions to one that could be solutions to all.
But even you really raised something with me in terms of opportunity. You know what I say, never waste a good crisis. And I think that is what climate change has given us the opportunity to do. Because even if we had these ideas without the phenomenon climate change or global warming, I don't believe that the small island developing states have gotten the type of funding that they've gotten over the last, let's say, 5 years, because I believe that the majority of the world has begun to take this thing a little bit more serious. Mm-hmm. Although we got the leader of the free world actually saying, climate change is a hoax.
This is something that is very serious. Now, I didn't mention initially in my introduction, but I was part of the government's delegation last year when we attended the Conference of Parties, COP25 in Madrid, Spain. And we don't understand the full weight that we carry as a small island. And Barbados has consistently been a leader at the international stage in relation to development and challenges, and especially as it relates to sustainable development. This delegation did some extremely good work. Dr. Hugh Seeley, he actually led the negotiations on Article 6. I would have tweeted some pictures with him leading from the top stage and doing some excellent work as it relates to that. And Article 6 speaks specifically to these issues in terms of both market and non-market opportunities for small islands like Barbados to benefit from what we call this challenge or this problem of climate change that can become an opportunity. Because we did not cause the problem. We are not the main contributors, but we're the main persons who feel the impacts. We do have a moral high ground to say, well, look, if climate change is going to be tackled, we need to ensure that these small islands have the resources to tackle it. And if you caused it, then you need to create mechanisms so that we can have the resources to do so. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And that's a big component of Article 6.
No, one of the other reasons when I was putting together this program is one of the reasons I want Barbadians and citizens of the CARICOM really to be educated is to help our regional leaders to raise the voice and raise the ante in terms of the needs of the Caribbean. I don't want the rest of the world to see our need after a hurricane has devastated a particular island every few years. I want them to understand, and I don't want them to believe it is 18 heads of state coming at them, but I want them to understand the harness the power of the 3 million people or however many people we have in the Caribbean, that it is all of our concerns and not a political agenda item to be discussed. And that is why I want the people of the Caribbean here in this program to really understand what it is that we are dealing with. Because all too often we leave topics like this to our leaders and the environmentalists, full stop. And that's why I want people, even if they understand the basics, I want them to be able to help raise the voice and actually put some fire under our leaders too, to understand that we are plugged in and we want representation on these issues at the regional and international level.
That's it. And this is, I think we are very fortunate in Barbados. We have a very good leader, and she really takes, our Prime Minister really takes climate change seriously, and is really a champion, not only on the national stage, but the regional and international stage, to ensure that we take action, and that small islands like Barbados do have the resources to really adapt to climate change. Now, at the level of the average person, the Small Grants Program has been doing some significant work to ensure that the average persons have the knowledge and have the ability to raise their voices. Mm-hmm. We would have partnered with the Commonwealth Foundation And through that, we were able to train over 25 leaders from across the Caribbean, leaders of civil society organizations. And we looked specifically at the impact of climate change and gender, and ensuring that they understand when they go to these COPs, how to negotiate, how to ensure that they have side events, how to ensure their voices are heard. And we did that not only in Barbados, but I did it again last year in Jamaica. And I have another planned workshop just like this in Trinidad. Yeah. So any persons who are interested, who lead civil society organizations and who want to know more about this and build capacity, you can contact me.
One of the things I wanted to do at the beginning, we'll do it throughout the program though, is to help listeners understand, householders even understand how they can get involved and how they can get the type of support. You know, a lot of the times you see the same names cropping up when it comes to stepping forward for support. But I think we can broaden the net to try to get more people involved by letting them know how to reach out to the Global Environment Facility, the Small Grants Program, the Blue Economy Initiative, and all those things using a program like this. It's just gone 20 minutes after 11 o'clock, so we're going to go to the telephone lines, and we're going to say hello and good morning to our first caller. Brass Tack Sunday, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How do you do, sir?
We are fine, thanks.
Okay, this is just an observation. It might more be for the engineering side of the OB. I've been noticing from this year, actually, that there are times on the radio when the volume comes up, then it goes way down, and then it keeps, you know, doing that. But other people have been telling me it happens with other radio stations as well. Can you do you know of this, and can you tell us why this is happening and what you're doing to correct it, please?
I definitely will not be the person in David's vast level of knowledge and information if he is familiar with these engineering waves and so on. But I know from in the studio, I can tell you, sometimes we have to set the levels here. So sometimes it's normally tested before you go on. But I know that from time to time, you may have to adjust the levels based on how loud or how low a guest or a moderator or announcer is speaking. So you may have that. Since you've been listening, have it been stable? I think we lost. I mean, not what the waves didn't get to him. And then in terms of our antenna and so on, I did hear David Ellis speak about the fact that we've been doing some testing island-wide some months ago, and they're really doing their best to address that. I think we lost that caller, but we'll take another call. Brass Tack Sunday, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, good morning.
And good morning to your guest. Mm-hmm. I have three questions. Mm-hmm. Due to climate change going on, should hotels build near the seaside? And number two, does climate change impact the tourism industry? And number three, is the ocean floor sinking due to climate change? I'll put on, listen.
Okay, no problem. Thank you for those questions. Before you put down already? Oh, she's gone. I wanted in case she wanted to do a follow-up, but go ahead. Let me start with the first one. In terms of hotels building by the seaside, let's tackle that one. Because, you know, it's development versus the environment all the time. Let's get your take on it.
Yeah, in terms of that, that's a very interesting question, and a question that is very relevant. Mm-hmm. As we look to adapt to climate change, in an ideal world, hotels should not be building close to the seaside because, you know, you're going to have sea level rise. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the way how Barbados has developed, not only hotels located along the coast, but we also have our main energy production plants along the coast, and a lot of our important infrastructure is along the coast. So it means that when we have serious issues in relation to climate events, extreme climate events, that we can have a lot of damage being done. However, hotels can build along the coast if they do follow the proper planning. So for instance, the Hilton Hotel is a good example of how you can have a hotel built on the coast and yet built in a way that it adapts to any extreme weather conditions. If you notice, when you go to the Hilton and you go on the ground level, there are no rooms, there are no hotel rooms. You ever notice that, Corey?
Yeah, yeah.
The hotel rooms are actually on top. Yeah. And that was built purposely as a means to adapt to extreme weather events and climate change as well. So it means that if you have any tsunamis, if you have any hurricanes and you have waves coming in shore, sea level rise, then persons are not going to be impacted because the people who are actually accommodated in the hotel are the higher floors. So if we're going to build near to the coast, we just need to be very cognizant that we need to build in a way that will be resilient to climate change.
And the next question in terms of, do you see it impacting our tourism? No. Before you answer that, remember I talked about how it impacted. Our three main industries were international business, tourism, and sugar. Mm-hmm. Sugar impacted by the drought and the markets, the European agreements. Now we get to tourism.
Will it
impact our tourism?
Yeah, definitely it would impact on tourism. And it's going to do so in multiple ways. I remember, you know, when climate change has started to become a very big buzz, like in early 2000s, and in England, they were already marketing, you know, why travel and go to the Caribbean or someplace else? Why not stay in England? Because, you know, the summers are going to be warmer, the winters are going to be warmer. So it means that you may not need to travel outside of your space. In Europe now, they're trying to capitalize on this as much as possible. So it means that in places before whereby would not have been competition, would now become competition for countries like Barbados. So it would have an impact on that level. It would also have an impact from the perspective of pricing carbon. Now, one of the big discussions at the global level and also in Madrid was to have a uniform price on carbon. To fly, you need to use fuel. Fuel is a carbon-based, we use a carbon-based fuel now. And if we tax carbon, it means that it's going to be more expensive to fly. And when it becomes more expensive to fly, as an economist, you know that people would fly less because the demand itself would be reduced because the cost becomes now too high. So it would have an impact from that perspective. It would also have an impact from the perspective of food. You know, climate change has an effect on food in different ways. There's some plants that can actually grow better, and there's some plants that will have it more difficult to grow. So you're going to find as carbon is taxed, that the cost of food is going to increase significantly. Unless Barbados changes its model whereby we produce what we don't consume, and we consume what we don't produce, and we bring tourists in on a plane, but the food is coming in with them, we're going to have a problem with the cost of food, being able to feed not only tourists, but also ourselves. We increase the cost of food, it means that the product that we have becomes more expensive. So climate change would have a direct impact on the product. It would make the product more expensive. It would also make allow for alternatives in countries that were not competition in the past.
Mm. And then about the, I mean, I see it affecting tourism in all these ways, and then it talk about the reefs and the diving and the beaches and so on. So I see it as serious. And that's why when you talk about mitigation and adaptation, I believe that I ask myself the question in terms of our planners, are they plugged into these things? I believe that when you talk about Tonga country planning and so on, they have to be on the cutting edge of research and development in terms of what's happening around the world and what are the projections. You know, we can predict and we can project, doesn't mean that that's what it's going to be. Then you talked about the building of the Hilton, and that should take Barbadians to understand that we were thinking about these things a good while ago, because remember the Hilton was built some time ago. Yeah. Now, we could talk about
it was
the policy.
It was rebuilt.
Rebuilt, yes. One of the things I was also looking at in terms of the individual, what can the individual do? Because when we think of things like tourism and flying and so on, we as individuals, we feel helpless. So then how do we transition the discussion now to not focus on what we cannot do, but what it is individually that we can do? I want to go back to primary school, literally. But one of the things I remember talking about is the ozone layer. And by using too much bop and bacon, and you create these and other kind of discussion to kind of make you personally responsible for the ozone layer. What kind of discussion could we have with the average citizen in terms of things that they specifically can do to help mitigate and adapt to in their own daily lives?
Yeah, before we go on to that, I think you mentioned a very important point that we shouldn't run over, in that it will impact significantly our coral reefs. And we did do, because of coral bleaching, as the ocean temperatures get hotter, you have a lot of coral bleaching occurring. And many of our beautiful reefs have been damaged and bleached. And we did a willingness to pay study in terms of what was the price that tourists put on, you know, visiting our coral reefs, and it was significant. So it means that part and parcel of people coming to Barbados is because of being able to see our beautiful coral reefs, and of course having lovely white beaches, which are going to be reduced as sea level rises. So that's another significant part that we must not run over. In terms of getting the average person to act, how can you act? I want people in Barbados and people in small islands not to just see climate change as this big threat that is coming to swallow us and destroy us all. I want them to also see the opportunity. It is a big threat. It is, it's like a real crisis, it's a real war. But, you know, the Chinese say that in every crisis, there's an opportunity. And I like to be a very optimistic person. So let's look for the opportunity. And the opportunity now with the new policy that we have in relation to renewable energy creates a huge opportunity for the average person to get involved in this energy revolution that is soon going to be overtaking Barbados. Now, the Prime Minister of Barbados said by 2030, she wants Barbados to be carbon neutral. It can only do so if every Barbados gets on board and they take action. And if you have the energy sector democratized, it means that the average person could have a panel on their house generating revenue that can help pay for the panel on their house and then also create some surplus. So the average person can see themselves getting involved from being able to, one, utilize the opportunity that we have in Barbados whereby you can, you know, there's quartz has higher purchase. I believe that soon you'll be able to buy a panel and put on your house using higher purchase. And that higher purchase now, instead of being a cost to you, would actually generate revenue for you because the money that you gain from the energy you sell, and you can be then offset that, pay for your HP, and still have a surplus at the end. So one way in which you can take action is by actually, you know, getting involved in this energy revolution. Another way in which you can take action is by being cognizant that the food that you eat, especially when it's imported, comes at a cost. Not only as a cost in terms of how much you pay for it, but they're hidden costs. Environmental economists call them externalities, and they're negative externalities. Because that food, when it's imported, it takes fuel. That fuel has a carbon attached to it that goes in the atmosphere, and it causes the earth to warm. Secondly, many of the foods that we import are sprayed heavily with pesticides. Most of these pesticides are carbon-based. They're also fertilized. Most of them have a link to a carbon-based industry. But beyond that is a big health cost. So we are importing food, we're importing damage to the environment, and we're also importing damage to our health at the same time. Mm-hmm. So the average person could actually take action by trying to eat more things that are grown locally, and also trying to produce some food locally around their house. That's an easy action that we can take. Another action that the average person can take, and we need to encourage much more, is in terms of ensuring that they can get active. For instance, we travel and we go around the world, and when we travel, we tend to take a train, a tram, or we take public transport. Why can't there be a biking lane in Barbados where when we travel, we can ride? Why can't there be more efficient public services as it relates to transport, so a person would feel comfortable about putting down their car and being able to take a tram? You know, I was so shocked being in Panama. I go to Panama frequently for work, but recently, in the last couple of years, they have a subway system. And the subway system is even better than the subway system you would get in London or you would get in New York. And many of the average people are using it. That's a direct way to actually mitigate in terms of reduce your impact on climate change. And there are many more ways that we can get involved in this, and we can actually make a direct contribution.
No, I actually like in this, and I usually tell my listeners when we have these types of programs, get your tablet, get your pen, your blacklight, whatever, and start to make some notes. Because even on the food import thing, what's coming up to me on that, I remember when we had buy local 100%, and there was some challenge to that, looking at the World Trade Organization rules and how you're trying to cut out competition, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking that if we could get people to eat locally for health and environmental reasons, if it could, would still have the same ramifications. So I'm just, some flags are going up in my mind. Now, the program, what we're talking about today, we're talking climate change, the Barbadian amidst climate change, and we're trying to dissect climate change so everyone can understand. You can join the program by sending your WhatsApp to 266-4862. And I recognize I forgot to call the number. I just figured everybody in Barbados has the number. The number to call to join us is 434-1790. 434-1790. I want to take some questions from off of the WhatsApp and comments and put them to you. And then remember, you still have to answer the ocean sinking question from our good caller, Miss Decided. This one says, good morning, Mr. Lane. Barbados is just like a small fly in a big bowl of soup when it comes to global warming. As you said, we have world leaders who said it's a hoax and actually want to bring back coal mines. All of the big countries are to blame. The small ones will suffer. This one says, Mr. Moderator, the only way we can get by in with the issue of climate change is to be objective with the history in Barbados. I asked that person to expand and explain on that a little bit more. And there's a direct question to you. If the PV adoption takes off in a massive way, where will all this revenue to PV users come from? So the person is asking, if we go PV in a massive way, where would all the revenue come from?
Mm-hmm. In order to make the investment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I mean the revenue after you make the investment, like how Substance Abuse Foundation getting 100,000.
Where would all the revenue come from?
Yeah.
This is direct, because we have a arrangement in Barbados whereby you have a buy all sell all system, where when you put solar on your house and you use electricity or on your buildings, the electricity used is bought from Barbados Light and Power, but any electricity produced is sold to Barbados Light and Power. So if you sell more than you use, then that difference is what you're paid by Barbados Light and Power. And it is actually better for Barbados Light and Power to pay you for producing energy for them and then distribute to the grid, rather than have to import oil, generate it at their plants, and then distribute it to persons. So it's a win-win situation, what we call a double dividend.
Right. I mean, simply put, we spend sometimes upwards of $800 million in importing oil. Some of that money would be what would be going to these PV users. Now, I forgot that we still have skeptics out there that we need to treat to. So I think we've glossed over the fact and we've taken for granted that everybody is bought into this. So here is a comment for you. Good morning. I'm somewhat skeptical about this whole notion of climate change. I can clearly remember the numerous predictions made by many leading climate change scientists who go off as far back as the 1980s. And they predicted that certain parts of the world would be underwater by the late 90s. And this is not fake news, it can be researched. Also, quite recently, there was a published in the news media that in the 90s, it was categorically published by scientists that the glaciers in Yellowstone Park in the USA, that by the year 2020, there will be no more. Can your panelists explain why these world-renowned scientists were wrong in their predictions? The glaciers are still there and still intact.
Yeah, in terms of the glaciers, this is something that is scientifically proven, especially in the north, that you are having the glaciers melting and the actual size of the glaciers are reducing. So that's something that can be fact checked. And of course, there's always fake news. We live in an era of fake news. But scientifically, the glaciers are melting, and we do have records showing that they are melting. In terms of countries who are actually facing the realities of their country disappearing, countries like Tuvalu, in the Pacific. And my work, I must say, does not only relate to the Caribbean. We are present in 125 countries around the world. And globally, I'm responsible for community-based adaptation in SIDS, both the Pacific and the Caribbean, and also African SIDS. And many of the reports come in to me from the national coordinators there, because they then report to me on their work on community-based adaptation. They're seeing it directly. And there are countries whereby you could walk before, you can't walk anymore. Towns are disappearing along the coast. You know, people are becoming climate refugees. So this is a reality. This is not just talk. This is a reality. I remember being in Bangladesh just about 4 years ago, and you saw coastal areas that just disappeared overnight, you know? So it's not something that I need to defend by saying, you know, this is it. You can Google online, check any scientific journal, and you would see that it is a reality. Of course, there'll always be skeptics. This is the world that we live in. But I can say climate change is no longer something that I need to stand on a pulpit and try to justify. It's a reality, something that we live and we experience every day.
Mm-hmm. As you say, when you look at the whole idea of the coal age versus now, there's just a definite, a fact, undisputed, that the climate will always be changing.
Yeah.
20 minutes before noon, this is Brass Tacks Sunday. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Corley, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thanks, and you, sir?
And to your guest. What is his name?
His name is Dr. David Bino, to be.
Mr. Bino. Yes, sir.
And good morning.
I enjoy the program. But, you know, there's just not a straight way towards it. You were saying one thing that makes sense, but yet there's still another side that nobody's looking at yet. Now, the reason why our country got to go the way it's going, we got to look back at the Bayesian Initiative. Now, these countries, now let me deal with Barbados before I deal with the rest of the country in the Caribbean. Barbados' GDP right now is $10 billion U.S. dollars. And Ms. Motley just said, because she said $50 billion in these countries and all. There's 10 countries, Ms. Monsanto said. It was 10 countries with the Bayesian Initiative that went down, that everyone, the Reagan went down here, that destroyed Grenada. So they get so much money to destroy Grenada, and this was hurting us now. No, this $10 billion got to spend outside, got to filter out. So we got to import, and we got to cap the prices, because it's a two-wheel ramming. We got to cap bringing things from outside, we got to cap the prices, because they got to filter back up that money. This money got to keep turning. So the real problem is what the government has put us into. If you look at our country from 1997 back to the beginning of time, and come from 80, then we want to learn between 80 and 81, and see what's happened. Everything from our country, before 79, we used to have our solutions, we used to create things in this country, we used to produce things in this country. And after 1979, everything turned. We went bringing in buses, we're doing every other thing, everything we bring in from outside after 1980. Check it and see what is going on. Of the government, and if we don't get behind our government, we just nothing can be fixed.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna give Mr. Bino the opportunity to respond to that and many other questions popping up here for him. This is Brass Tacks Sunday, brought to you the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
The Barbadian and amidst climate change. What can be done and what can't? Now, before we went to the break, a caller, I put a number of scenarios and a question to you. I'll let you respond, Mr. Bino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of the reason why we need to import or not and import certain things, I'm not going to get into that. I would say, though, that in terms of imports, this is an era where we can do a lot of work in Barbados in reducing them. And in doing so, we would not only save foreign exchange, but we would actually foster businesses that can generate foreign exchange. And I would argue that climate change presents this opportunity. With the revolution that we expect to have over the next 10 years, you're going to see that we would not only have the ability to install solar PV and other forms of renewable energy on our roofs, but we'll be developing scientists, engineers, people who manage projects that specialize in renewable energy. So this allows us now to export that expertise to other countries who don't have it. Barbados is very advanced in terms of our policy in relation to renewable energy. Many countries don't have the ability to buy and sell to the grid. we have that policy in place that we can buy energy from the grid and sell back to the grid. We have many innovations, not only in terms of solar energy, but we're moving towards other alternatives like bioenergy, also in terms of energy from wind. And this expertise that we're generating, we can use that to then export. In addition to that, energy, simply put, Corey, is the ability to do work. And a man who controls energy, if you control energy, you're rich, you know, you're wealthy. The ability to control energy is a significant thing. And so if Barbados can take and have energy sovereignty, control this energy, it means that we can reduce the cost of production in Barbados. The reason why people produce in Trinidad more and not in Barbados is because the cost of energy, the cost of labor as well, but the cost of energy is low. So if we can make our cost of energy attractive, and if we can make energy not a thing, not a big detractor from production, it means that we can now produce more things and at a more reasonable cost. So we need to look at this as an opportunity and delve right into it.
Now let's tap back to the ocean floor sinking question, because at least two more persons have asked that here on the WhatsApp.
Now the ocean floor sinking, now as sea level rise, one, you're gonna have that the, of course, the ocean floor would now be if you measure it relative to sea level, it's gonna be lower. But also it means that there's gonna be more pressure within the ocean, right? The ocean's gonna be, you have the water melting from the glaciers, the mountain tops. You look at mountains like Kilimanjaro in Africa and making its way into the oceans, meaning that the ocean has more water in it. It's gonna increase the pressure on the ocean, and it may lead to some deformities within the ocean floor, causing some places to actually sink or become lower than they were before. We know that if you put pressure on a surface and the surface is hollow, it's very likely that it can collapse. So ocean floor sinking is something that we will see and we'll probably see more of.
All right, let's go to the telephone lines. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Corey.
Good morning, Uncle Mark.
Quite an interesting program. I need to ask three questions of your guests. And the first question, we're talking about the climate change, and we're talking about the point of planting about 2 to 3 million trees, and they're planted inland. How effective that would be. As far as the coastline is concerned, based on what I'm hearing about the coastline, climate change, we know for a fact that the coastline, our coastline, is questionable from the south coast all the way out. My question, as far as this is concerned, would it be advisable at this time, seeing that we have not been able to control the climate change that we encountered because of our energy? Would it be advisable to build on the coastline of Barbados at the moment, build new structures on the coastline?
Yes. So first of all, in terms of we would address that. Sorry, before I move to that, just thank you very much for your comments. I find that your comments are always very informative, and also they tend to dig deep. And your first comment, we would have addressed that somewhat in when we had one of our first callers. And yes, you can still build on the coastline, but you have to build in a way that would be resilient to climate change. I would have given the example of the Hilton Hotel. The ideal is if you didn't have to, then you wouldn't. But because of the developmental paradox that we have in Barbados, is something that we probably would see more of, but we have to ensure that when we do build, that they're resilient to climate change. The new physical development plan does, however, speak to that and took that into consideration. So I believe that those projects being approved will be approved, taking in mind the resilience to climate change. As it relates to planting trees, we spoke about some things that you can do, and planting trees is an excellent thing that the average person can do. Because when you plant trees, you actually lead to carbon being then sequestered. You call it carbon sequestration. Simply put, the trees, they take in carbon dioxide and they produce oxygen. And a lot of that carbon dioxide is then trapped within the tissue and cells of the plants. And it means that you're actually reducing the carbon that is going into the atmosphere. So it's a means of climate change mitigation. So that initiative is a brilliant initiative, and it would pay dividends for Barbados. But it's also an adaptation measure at the same time. Because when you plant more trees, you have more trees, what is happening is that you're providing shade for the soil. So less water that hits the soil is going to evaporate. More of the water is going to go into the aquifer and fill the aquifer. In fact, one of the reasons why we probably have a slow recharge is because more and more the land in Barbados is being covered with concrete. And when you cover the land with concrete, the water just runs off. And most of the time, a lot of that water finds its way directly in the sea instead of filtering through the soil and finding its way into the aquifer. So planting trees, brilliant, both adaptation method method and a measure and a mitigation measure at the same time. In addition to that, we didn't mention, but Barbados is moving towards more transport, sustainable transport. And we're seeing more and more of these electrical vehicles. This is something that needs to be promoted. In fact, there probably should be incentives for persons who prefer to drive an electric vehicle because it not only reduces carbon emissions, but if we are producing renewable energy in Barbados and we are carbon neutral, it means that that's foreign exchange that we're saving by not using a diesel or gasoline engine and by using electricity that could be produced by renewable energy. So if you pair your home by having PV at your house and driving an electrical vehicle, you're saving money and smiling all the way to the bank.
That was the first question. Go ahead, Connor.
What I like is the education process that is coming out this morning. But we have seen, sir, that within recent years, the total destruction of trees to make way for buildings, which would spring up soon after that. So if you physically look at Barbados in terms of development, we realize that over the years that several trees have been destroyed in order for the development to take place. So I'm wondering if our position on this would not be a case of not knowing building quota in terms of people building, engineers, or fit with what your move and your world effort is doing, if they're just building as they like, or if there's a body of people who are controlling this whole thing that's going on. Because one side, sir, is that we see development going on. The other side is we're wondering the speed of development, because how many of these people are going to be dealing with panels in order to reduce the electricity and save currency. I think this should be a must in terms of any product or any building, any construction that's going up. I also think that the demolition of trees should stop. And I also believe, sir, that somewhere along the line that there should be a more education process in relation to the climate change aspect, because people hear of climate change. I myself, being honest with you, familiar with just a little bit of it. But climate change, yeah. if you look at things that could happen, earthquakes, high waves, tsunamis, different things. So we are in a position to at least be listening now more so than doing things without understanding exactly how dangerous it could be to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as usual, you made some excellent points. And I must say, in the past, and if we go back to our development when we decided to go into tourism, and we decided to build along the coast, so the coast was premium land. We had mangroves that stretch from the north to the south and wrapped around. And we destroyed the majority of our mangroves. And mangroves are the primary protection from when you have serious storms and hurricanes, because they mitigate or they reduce the waves, the wave action, from actually destroying the land and houses that are built along the coast. But we took away our mangroves. We only have one there left in Graham Hall, and that one is being starved, basically. And we have a couple others, but they're relatively small in comparison to what we had before. So that was a major error in terms of our development, how we approach development. But it was done, I think, primarily out of ignorance in that time. Before, when people, policymakers, make decisions, sometimes they don't always make it with perfect information, because there are certain hidden costs that are not revealed. And many decisions are made on a dollar value. And if you can't internalize those externalities I spoke about, those positive impacts of having trees, the positive impacts of having mangroves, if you can't put a dollar value to these things,
then the policymaker is not going to be able to understand how valuable they are. And that's why the environmental economists were created, because they realized there was a serious error in how policymakers were making decisions, because they could not internalize the dollar value of the environment. So environmental economists then were specially trained. They are economists, like every other economist, but they're trained with the ability then to internalize the what we call those non-market values, these externalities. Like the sugarcane fields, they have a value. There's some tourists that come to Barbados because they like to see rolling sugarcane fields. We've lost a lot of that. The coral reefs, they have a value, because not only people come to snorkel with them, but they also help, again, to reduce wave action. They're natural barriers. They conserve biodiversity. And there are many other environmental things that we don't put a value to. So if the policymaker can then internalize that value and have a dollar value and say, well, look, this development is going to bring $10 million or $20 million in Barbados over the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. But these mangroves are going to save us $100 million, you know, over those same years.
Listening to you, that's the sort of thoughts I think, and that's when I was talking about citizens being educated so that they can actually call on policymakers. Because if the policymakers, they don't have this information or have limited information, and the populace has none at all, then we up a creek without a paddle, or we in a serious climate change situation without a mangrove. And that is why I, listening to you, I think that, the as the caller said, the education is so critical. The other point I want to touch on too before we go back to the lines, the whole idea of the opportunity and the money. I remember at the last Energy Expo, I think it was in November last year, the Minister of Energy said if any Barbadian can put to him, that he can put to cabinet, a way to convert a lot of the carbon-based fuel cars that we have now, to convert them efficiently to energy, they could become millionaires overnight. Mm. You understand that? So this is where now one can become a wealthy economic player based on ideas. Mm-hmm. Before, it had to be by inheritance, by investment, and so on. But ideas, we're moving into an age of ideas where people can sell ideas through patents and various things. So that also is an opportunity that's there. The other thing is, in terms of, again, what can we do? Because I say a lot of times, small islands, people, we think about what we can't do. When you think about the mangroves, and, you know, bringing back some of those, that's something that we can do. When we look at building inland as opposed to building so much on the coast, that's something we can do. So those are things coming out of the program. I like people to think about what can we do, and as we are having idea forums with the Prime Minister, these are things that the policymakers can be made aware of how we feel about them directly. We take another call. Brastats, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Hey, I know Piccadilly voice. Hey, good, thanks.
And this you? Mohammed Nassau,
Yes, I know.
Good morning to your guest, too, Mr. Biner.
And good morning, and God bless. Always a pleasure chatting with you.
I'm going to ask you a question, though, sir. Mm-hmm. All over Barbados, there's a law that says that you must build, you must have so many tanks or such and such a tank under your house or around your house to catch the rainwater.
Yes.
Now, all over Barbados, there are a lot of houses, I believe almost every house, full of tanks or rainwater are in tanks, just standing there and getting still and still and smelling worse and worse. Do you really believe the time will come when we should really stop that? I let the water go down through the aquifers through the earth and get back to the aquifers. What's your opinion on that, sir?
Yeah, my opinion on that is that I don't think that would be the primary problem, but you do have a point, because, for instance, my house, we have a water tank, and the water tank has a pump, so it means we can pump it and use it for gardening, washing the cars, but it also has a two-way system that you can turn off and on where you can have it flush the toilets and do other things. And that was smart design, so that you actually reduce your water bill and you also do benefit to the environment. Now, if people would actually use the tanks instead of just setting them up and putting them there and getting it approved and then don't have a pump, they may rent. Some people actually rent a pump just for inspection. And then after inspection, they send back the pump. Some people put the drums there, and after they sell the drums. So we need to have proper enforcement to ensure that these things are taken seriously.
As water is priced the way how it should be priced, it means that more and more people would take this seriously. However, it doesn't necessarily mean that in order for people to take things seriously that you have to make things expensive. Education awareness should encourage people to do the right things. Sometimes it doesn't always work.
I want to answer a question, though. What you just said about your home and a few homes that would be like that, the vast majority of people cannot afford that. They barely get the house bill. But at the same time, we have all this water, hundreds of gallons, thousands of gallons, maybe millions of gallons of water all tied up. And I told something that happened one time. A human being out of ignorance did not know. I'm a very educated human being, too. Their water went off. They had this tank inside the house, went and turned on the water and went to use the water and nearly killed themselves. It was so stagnant and dirty and stink.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that, yes, I agree what you were saying, that some homes and some people can afford that, but a lot of people can scarcely afford them.
But what about the persons that can afford to have the tanks there that you spoke about? They have the tanks there already, and they're mandated by Town Country Plan to have it. So it means that we need to implement.
We need to expose, explain, not expose. A lot of people have things they're doing, but they have things, but they do not know the next step that they can carry it to, you know.
You're right.
So what you're doing here today with Corey is a fantastic thing. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of things that you all are saying, you know, I will box them in my way and bring them back to the public in a different way. But the truth is, a lot of people mean well, but they do not have the knowledge of these things. There's some way that we should do a little adding, do a little documentary.
Yeah, we should do more things like that. I used to do a program before called Green Living on television. It still runs up until this day. I will be doing some more programs regionally, looking at some of the work that we're doing in the region on climate change adaptation. And it would have a lot of these things highlighted within those programs. But I must say that the program that I coordinate, we fund mangroves, Corey. So if people want to plant more mangroves and they get together in a community group, and you know, we can fund up to $50,000 towards mangroves, towards any community projects that contribute to climate change, both adaptation and mitigation. We also would like to set up a demonstration house where people can see that, you know, a house could be fully powered by solar. The water that you use can come all from your tank, you know, and it could be treated water. In those countries, you don't get water with the chlorine water from the Barbados Water Authority or the Community Water Authority. You get it from your roof, and it's then purified, and you drink it. Your energy for cooking can come from biogas.
Right.
So you don't need all these things, and we could be self-sufficient in many things, yeah? So,
I want to ask you one quick question. I understand that it's chlorine that they put in water.
Chlorine,
yes. That put in the water. They claim that because of that chlorine putting in the water has tremendously improved the teeth of human beings in Barbados, maybe in the world. If we filter all this water really clean and use it for the chlorine, do you believe that will create a problem for the masses again? Because there's some people who actually put in filters outside their house so that all the water going to their house are filtered. What is your opinion about that?
Mm-hmm.